There's a chance for Nylander. He sends it wide of the net. Out back of the goal, Hyman wraps it in front of the net. They score! Austin Matthews! He holds the record now! And the Maple Leafs have a 1-0 lead!
So sweet. So sweet. Not only do the Leafs win, the weather is fantastic outside. History was made last night. Just keeps getting better and better as we welcome you into Leafs Lunch. That's right, we are up at 11 a.m., 11 to 1 p.m. now. If you've heard this all week so far, my apologies. We'll keep reminding people for the rest of the week, then I promise next week we stop. But for those who just tune in, haven't listened in a while, we are now 2 hours, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Annie Petrillo alongside Dave Poole and Patrick O'Sullivan. The Leafs coming off a 3-2 win last night against the Florida Panthers, maintaining their hold on third place in the Atlantic Division, 1 point up on Boston with still a game in hand. Other notables last night, Edmonton Oilers clinch a playoff berth.
Your voice there.
That was a segue. That's my segue voice.
Cool.
So Edmonton Oilers clinch a playoff berth for the first time in 11 years. Last time they made it to the playoffs was the 05-06 season, where they made it to the Stanley Cup final and lost to the Carolina Hurricanes. Okay, then I want to talk about the Carolina Hurricanes, because they're picking up some speed here. They've picked up points in the last 12 straight games, tying a franchise record that was set in that very same year that they won the Cup.
Ooh, look at your tie-ins.
Mm-hmm.
I'm away for a couple of days, and I come back, and clearly Patrick is now in charge of music.
No, like that's Andy's song.
That's me. Aerosmith's my favorite band. Whole Wide World's loves
well,
me some Steve Tyler.
Well, then why do we play all that other stuff all the time?
Because I also like Geno
music
Beats.
Like that.
No. Andy, did you enjoy Mark Rowe taking shots at you yesterday?
No. It's okay. You know what? I'll let him have his moment. Geno Beats will always reign supreme.
Andy's back, and she's all fired
especially
up
now there. That the weather's getting warmer. Who doesn't want the ints? Outside the window from the car. Sweet.
This is pretty much everybody.
Yeah. Detroit. So here's the thing. The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Right back to task.
So Toronto Maple Leafs by no means are in a spoiler position, right? They're right in the hunt for the playoffs. They're playing meaningful games down here. Yet, in some way, they were the spoiler, and that would be for the Detroit Red Wings, because with Detroit losing last night and Boston winning, Toronto just needed to pick up 1 point in last night's game to eliminate the Detroit Red Wings from playoffs. And that's it. 25 years postseason action coming to an end. We'll discuss that a little later on in the show as well. We have Pierre LeBrun coming up later on in the hour. We'll talk some stuff with him. And captain of the women's USA hockey team will be joining us as well, Megan Duggan, USA Hockey. And the team signing a 4-year deal that will see the women better compensated. So very groundbreaking there. So they will, in fact, participate in the World Championships, which start this Friday in Plymouth. Game one against Canada, USA, the defending champs. So how about we start with Austin Matthews and him getting goal number 35 and just how incredible that is. And what I didn't realize is when you look at the Leafs rookies, three of them have 50-plus points. And out of curiosity, I'm like, when was the last time the Leafs just had a rookie that got 50-plus points? So this year they have three. The last time they had just one, you got to go back to the 88-89 season. Daniel Marois had, what did he have here? He had 50, I think it was 51 points.
A little bit
sorry,
of a Cy
54.
Young goal
he had
too.
31 goals, 54 points. We're going back to 88-89. Wow.
It's a very, very talented group. And in a great way, Austin Matthews scored from exactly where he's got how many of his 35 from. Right side of the ice.
Many
of his exact 35 have been just like that.
He might be the best in the league at figuring out, you know, the space he needs to go into. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys just go and stand as close as they can to the goalie. Sometimes you need to go there. Sometimes you need to be 3 or 4 feet back. That space, the spacing, the ability to find it and then to get a quality shot off in that tight little area below the hash marks.
Yeah, the great thing with that spacing, it's such a close area, but there's two different things. There's your body space and then where your stick blade is space. And he's got both of them that he controls really, really well. Because you can be in a good body space and think, I'm in a really good place here, but where your stick blade is not going to score a goal. And a lot of it involves in a little movement just before the shot. So he changes where his stick is. Boy, is he good from in there. He might be as good as anybody is from in there right now.
And Lou Lamoriello recognized it because Mark Masters actually interviewed Austin Matthews after the game. Live. You know the rookies aren't made available. That's why if you ever watch Leafs games and you're always like, why is it always Tyler Bozak, James Van Riemsdyk, Jake Gardner? Well, because the rookies aren't allowed to talk. And all of a sudden, Austin Matthews doing the interview with
a
boy.
You have to talk after you've set
you
the rookie record.
To.
You have to.
Why can't you talk anyways?
That's a whole
is it going to disrupt his intermission?
The argument might be now, is Austin Matthews still a rookie right now?
I talked about that yesterday. To me, I don't look at him like a rookie. The Tapman and I talk about in the pregame show, we talk about our player to watch, who's going to be the guy that has to make an impact. To me, on most nights, it's got to be Austin Matthews because he's your best player. Mm-hmm. He's your leader. Doesn't matter how old he is.
So, of course, the record he broke was Wendell Clark's record that he set in his rookie year. And this is what Austin Matthews had to say when he broke the record of Wendell Clark.
Yeah, it's a pretty big honor. Obviously, like I said, I was an amazing player, amazing person for the community here in Toronto, and still is. So to be in the same sentence as him is a pretty big honor for me.
But a record he will never beat, not only just not in his rookie year, but I don't think ever, would be Wendell Clark's 23 fights in his rookie season.
Nor would he want to.
No, probably not.
The smart man.
But he even admitted that being in this city now, obviously he grew up in Arizona, but being in this city, he's realizing, just like how you said, Sully, like, oh, I didn't realize how much the media here actually loved James Reimer and how you guys talk about him. Austin Matthews didn't really realize the love this city has for Wendell Clark. And he was like, wow, this guy's a legend. And yeah, he's a ledge. And now
and
he's in the
handful,
same sentence.
There's a handful, a ledge. There's a handful of those guys, over the last, Daryl Sittler would be one, Dougie Gilmore would be one, Boreas Salming, but a pretty small handful.
Mm-hmm.
Of that caliber of, and it also deals with the caliber of person. The Wendell Clark caliber person is pretty darn high.
It is. Now, here's another thing, and I know we've talked about the mentality of Austin Matthews and how a lot of times, even when he speaks, doesn't really speak like he's this 19-year-old kid. That's why we also have the ongoing conversation of just make him the captain, but it's just a matter of when do you put the C on him? Do you put it on in the offseason? Do you put it on next season? Do you give him another year? It doesn't matter. He has captain quality written all over him. I know we've had Don Granato on, who talked about Austin Matthews at the World Championships a few years ago. And it was Austin Matthews looking down the hallway, seeing Sidney Crosby and saying, I want to be playing against guys like that, which is why he then ended up going and playing in the Swiss League, because he wanted to be playing against men. So we know all this stuff about he's not afraid to challenge himself. He doesn't back down from a challenge. He's not scared. And Mike Babcock was asked about Austin Matthews and the defensive side of his game and kind of showing that improvement. And this is what Mike Babcock said. Basically, he had a conversation about this with Austin Matthews at the start of the season.
We met at the start of the year. I mean, real clear, you can play on the wing or you can play, no, I want to play center. You want to play 200 feet then. And he wants to do that. He wants to be the best player in the world, and so up front. And so that's going to be the challenge for him. So he's going to have to be an elite guy, 200 feet, and those guys make their team win.
So, Patrick, did he have the same conversation with Willie Nylander? Didn't Willie Nylander say, I want to play in the middle. I want to be a complete player.
No.
I want to go 200 feet.
You cannot.
He may have had a conversation, but I think it was a one-way street. There wasn't a lot of input from...
You had a conversation at the start of the year. Of course you did, and... I bet you Willie's answers were exactly the same as Austin's. And I'll bet you Mitch's answers were exactly the same. Can we play at center? Yes, you can play me at center. I want to play center. I can play center.
But obviously Austin Matthews showed not only that he could do it, but he could do it on
true,
a consistent basis.
Yeah, well, 100%. Yeah, I mean, you know a guy like him is going to want to play center. He wants to take that challenge on. You don't go first overall and not have that kind of personality. It's just the way it works.
A significant separator for him is his size. And I don't think that's talked about enough. He's a big guy, and he's a thick guy. And
he's still young. He can only get stronger from here.
He clearly can, but that's, you don't often say Austin Matthews has good size. Like, it's something that's just not said. Or,
yeah.
He's a big guy. When we interviewed him at the draft last year, we were standing with him.
Well, he towered
taking a
over
picture
us.
There. It was like... It's a big dude here, and that's something that you...
everyone towers over me. I should just also make that perfectly clear.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But he did tower over.
You are really,
he
doesn't, well. You're really short.
Because he doesn't use his size in the traditional sense.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't think it gets brought up, but he uses it every shift. That's the thing. He uses it to make plays. He uses his reach. He uses his body. He uses it to separate guys from the puck. He doesn't hit a lot.
Because he's not running over somebody, you're not saying, wow, he's a big guy. But on that goal last night, his little separation from Yandel there, and Yandel isn't, you know, we're not talking.
Yandel didn't know where he was on the ice at that point.
No, just lock in on where he was. He was right
push
there.
Off.
He was right there. But the little separation right before the goal, and it was a little backward step, he uses his size very, very effectively, and probably more so in the defensive end. He protects the puck well. And it's a subtle use of size. It's almost a space use of size rather than a physical use of size.
I think
that's deep. That is deep stuff right there.
Yeah, mark that so we can play it back one time when we're just in need of pearls of wisdom.
He's been better lately because he hasn't had the hard top two line matchup that he was getting for a while there. Babcock's kind of gone away from that. He's used Boyle more against those guys. And you can
well, the
kinda,
Chicago one was a really good example.
Exactly.
Really good example.
But last night, you know, the Florida's Riley Smith, that goal, that's Matthews' fault, that goal.
And I was going to point that out again.
Yeah. It's a face-off play where he has to switch. He has to exchange his guy with Gardner's guy. And the winger comes up high, and he just lost him, and he got beat to the net. So, I mean, that's the part of the game that's by far the hardest to learn and the hardest to get used to. Playing center in that league. I mean, and that was against their third line that he was out there against. So it wasn't like Barkov beat him to the net or anything.
Right,
like that.
And that's not, communication is unbelievably necessary, and I don't think players talk anywhere near enough on the ice, but there's an unspoken communication that has to happen there that becomes automatic with that transfer between the D and the forward, the centerman on the faceoff. I mean, it's just, and that takes time, but the D is also
the D
is critical part of that as well.
Way more important because 9 times out of 10, all over the ice, they're standing facing everything. They can see everything that's going on. And as a forward, you have your back to the puck or to the play. Things are developing quickly, and you know, depending on how big Jake Gardner's mouth guard is, may have played a role in that. Everybody wears a mouth guard. Do you notice that, Dave? It's crazy.
Do they have it in their mouth, though?
Well, some of them are chewing on it, but at the end of the day, it's going to impede.
The majority of them are chewing on it. Now, the mouth guards today, that doesn't affect your talking. You think that affects it?
I don't know. I could never wear one because I felt like I couldn't talk
properly.
They're
so thin now. I think that's past that. I really do. I think it's the willingness to talk on the ice. And it was so hard when I was coaching to get guys to talk on the ice because when you talk, you're accepting responsibility.
So you're saying if I want to shut someone up, just put a mouth guard in their mouth?
Could work.
So Dave, some of them wear
there's a lot of spitting going
too.
On.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Supposed to align your jaw properly so that your body can perform better.
It doesn't clench.
Yeah. Oof.
Well, see, and here's the thing, and I brought this
clenching
up
is bad.
With Austin
what if we
Matthews?
Came in and Andy had a mouth guard on tomorrow?
What are you trying to say?
Funny. No, I'm talking to Patrick, Andy.
I'm looking at you, Pooley. So here's the thing. Remember about a month ago and I had to look over my shoulder because I thought like people were going to come at me with pitchforks when I very politely, constructively criticized Austin Matthews in that. I think it was against Detroit where he didn't pin his man properly against the boards and then the puck didn't get out and the other team ended up scoring. And I just said that to your point, he's a big kid and I wish he just used his size a little bit more. However, we all acknowledge that he's so smart that he doesn't have to really hit hard, be, I guess, that physical presence, because the way he gets his stick in the action, right? He lifts other guys' stick just right to strip them of the puck. But I just feel that sometimes he can rely on that a little too much, and that was a good example last night, because that's what he was trying to do, was get to Smith's stick. But if he just took one more stride, and it didn't even have to be a big stride, he would have been right in front of Smith, just knocking him out of the way.
When you're a good-sized guy like that, even as a teammate, you want a guy like that to physically impose himself more just to earn himself more room. And I played with a physical monster in Timmy Kerr in Philadelphia, and he would stand in front of the net, and you couldn't get him mad. You could cross-check him. You'd spear him. And we'd say, Timmy, if you'd get mad once in a while, you'd create that much more space. but it wasn't his persona. It just wasn't.
Is he a gentle giant?
JVR.
Absolutely gentle giant. Yeah, same mm-hmm. thing. You would say, if you imposed yourself physically, and that's what you're going to want from time to time with Austin Matthews, but it's not his makeup and it's not his personality. Would he earn himself more room if he did it once in a while? Yes, he would. But it's not part of his game, and it may never be.
He needs some more of them smelling salts before
and
the
you don't
game.
Ever flip that around. That's my issue with talking about size. Hmm. So you have a big guy. You don't ever say, can you play like you're smaller, please? Can you make more plays? Well, what if I'm not capable of making more plays? Austin Matthews, too. The hard thing about being a young player in this league is that goal yesterday, the goal against, is a really good example of it because you have to understand that everybody is smart for the most part. Hmm. You can be out against the other team's third line, and Riley Smith, the veteran player, doesn't have a ton of points this year, but he knows how to play the game, and that's what you have to. You can never have your, you know, let your guard down, basically, in your own zone against any line and any player, and that's the difference between this level and every other one below it.
But back to your earlier point, because of Boyle, now in the last few games, you've gotten much better matchups for Matthews, much better.
When you and I don't see why you wouldn't do it that way if you have the ability to have Matthews. Especially with Nylander, have them be in more offensive situations. I didn't count yesterday, but I'd be willing to bet a lot of money that Matthews didn't take more than two or three faceoffs in his own zone. And he doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm. No, Babcock mentioned after the game, too, about some faceoff losses. So he acknowledges that. That's obviously stuff they need to work on. And I know it may sound like we're being hard because he's in his rookie year, but there's so much good that when you just look at these things, you're like, okay, work on that. And how incredible would you be? So we got a lot
this
more.
Guy, I mean, is it too early to start talking about Hyman?
No, wait. We are going to get to that. We do
tease
have
the grades of the game. Grades, up in the next hour.
Grades of the game That's are coming right. up in the TV hour. We will talk definitely Hyman then. Why not give a little teaser? We can still talk a little Hyman here if you'd like, but we do have to get to Zach Hyman. We even have to get to your Edmonton Oilers, my friend.
Oh, my oil. Once an Oiler, always an Oiler, is
so,
the saying.
In the playoffs for the first time in 11 seasons. Now you're showing some love, eh? Okay, we'll talk about that. So a lot more coming up here. And then a little surprise.
Is it love?
That I have for you, Sully.
Okay, yeah. We have big
some,
news.
We have some surprises here, because that's what I do. I give gifts. I'm a loving host. As you continue to listen to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050 and on iHeartRadio, TSN.ca. So, Sully, you know we have this thing on Leafs Lunch that started really from the beginning because the Leafs haven't been all that good in the shootout.
The worst, actually. Yeah.
So, yeah, bad. And Andrew Brewer, as we know, one of the assistant coaches of the Toronto Maple Leafs, comes on out during the shootout to suggest who should be in the shootout. And because it hasn't gone all that well for the Toronto Maple Leafs, we started this thing where if anything goes wrong, we blame the shootout guy. That's the thing. Ah, blame the shootout guy. If the weather is bad, if it's raining, blame the shootout
Parking
guy.
Parking gate doesn't work.
Blame the shootout guy. So we were talking about it on Monday. I put it out there. We were talking about the whole doctor not being in Buffalo. And I said, blame the shootout guy. I said, one of these days we're going to get a t-shirt made. Well, a shout out to the guys and girls over at Shore Tees Company in Hamilton. We're going to show this again in the TV hour because you have to see these shirts. They're actually great. They sent us in. So, Sully, I got you one, too. They sent us in the t-shirts that say, blame the shootout guy.
Really good.
How awesome is this?
Really, if you're streaming and you can see this.
Yeah, if you're streaming, you can see it. We're going to put it on in the TV hour because they're actually really nice shirts. Blame the shootout guy. Thank you.
Sully's going to put his on, but then he's going to bust out of it.
Do you think it's the right size?
I do.
Yeah.
XL.
Well, I asked him what size he is.
No, it's a large. It's only a large.
It'll fit you. You said large.
Could go on right over that shirt and kind of be a nice combo.
How's that for a random tweet from your co-host?
I'm not an XL. They're always too end up being too long for me.
No, you want the Euro look. You need it streamlined.
So, Andy, why don't you chat a little bit about, I don't know, Mercedes Benz?
I know. Hey, Tiffany, you make really good diamonds.
So the best thing I ever got, they asked me during the Stanley Cup Finals one year how I deal with stress. And I said,
like just in an interview?
Yeah, just an interview. You know, you're in the Stanley Cup Finals. How do you deal with stress? You're the captain of the Flyers. I said, I clean. I clean.
Sound like my wife.
And when I'm dealing with stress, The place is spotless.
Wow.
It's absolutely spotless. I said no one would ever touch my lemon pledge during the playoffs. I got a 3-year supply of lemon pledge.
Wow.
That's a lot.
And then I was trying to calculate how I could say no one goes near my Mercedes during the playoffs. But it just
I need to invite you over, stress you out.
Oh, you need to stress me out first.
And then have you clean my house.
Yeah, that'd be a good thing.
But I was going to say, how's that for a random tweet from your co-host? I just randomly, or said, I text Sully. I'm like, what shirt size are you?
I'm getting you something.
It's like, what?
I'm shopping right now.
I thought it was a joke. So my response was extra medium.
I know. I had no clue. I'm like, what is that?
What does that mean?
Yeah. See, so I'm really excited. Thank
nice
you
job,
to Shorties. I know. And they're great. It's a great shirt. I am going to be wearing it.
So at least we get one thing out of having this extra hour on the air.
I know. Look how exciting that is.
Picking up sponsors by the minute.
Now we have a lot to talk about, and I know everyone's waiting with bated breath for Sully to talk about Zach Hyman. We are going to get to that. Don't you worry.
Teaser.
Putting him on the spot. But I do want to get to the penalty, non-penalty thingy, whatever that was. So as we know, Polak was supposed to go to the box for a high stick. Apparently he high-sticked Huberto. But when you look at the replay, you know that it was the puck that hit Huberto in the face. But of course the refs, the officials, they all get together. They all chat. Did you see it? Did you see it? Then it becomes a penalty. So it's up on the board, 2 minutes. Tire ACC goes bonkers. And of course, the replay plays on the big screen. Do we still call it a Jumbotron? Like, what is that thing?
Sure.
Sure.
The big TV.
The big Jumbotron. But as you know, Marty Baron pointed this out on the panel yesterday. He said it's a brand new Jumbotron that Toronto Maple Leafs put in not too long ago. And now they actually have TVs underneath it as well.
So there's four monitors inside the scoreboard.
So the benches
right
can see it. Yes.
You can look up and see it. Before, you'd had to back off to get an angle. But you can look up right inside that scoreboard from center ice.
Yeah. So if you're a player on the bench, if you're a player
anywhere,
on the ice.
Anywhere you can see it.
It's easier now for you to look up and see it. So, of course, the replay goes. Maybe one of the refs did a little looks up. Oh, crap. And next thing you know, they have another little meeting. Okay, never mind. It's not a penalty.
You do that really well.
You've had
little meetings.
That's how I have little meetings.
You are a person who's had little meetings.
And that's basically how the conversations go. So they call it off. Now, it's the right call. I think we can all agree it's the absolute right call. But of course now, and then Ray Ferraro brought up a good point, and this is what kind of goes, ugh. He said, you can only imagine now that the NHL will probably be calling all the different arenas saying, you cannot show those replays so quickly after the call is made. But and not that Ray was making a stance on anything, he was just saying that could be a possibility, and it made me think, wait a second, that shouldn't be the case. Like, why would you not allow, only in a situation like that where there really is such a noticeable either disagreement or yikes, we really don't know what happened, why wouldn't you allow the refs to look at something?
Before Dave says what he's going to say, and I know what it is and I agree with him, let me just say this. It wasn't that noticeable. It became noticeable because of the replays, because of the fan reaction, because it was happening to the home team. The home team. Go ahead, Dave.
You cannot review every single thing that happens in a game of hockey because you just said when it's really noticeable. Who decides when it's really noticeable? Patrick just put it perfectly. It wasn't really noticeable until you looked at it three times on the replay. And we got into this in the American League, and I was on the governance committee of the American League, and we got into this ad nauseum. I mean, you can just hear, like, we had teams in San Antonio and newer markets, right? And they said you can't show a controversial goal on the replay for the home team that benefits the home team. And we'd have people stand up and say, we're going to show it 19 times. That excites the fans. That gets everybody all fired up. You don't understand. That's exactly what we want. Like, they want that controversy. They want everybody fired up. That's what they're going to do. And this is the issue. You cannot referee the game on the scoreboard and on monitors. Otherwise, we're going to have nine-hour games, and you just can't do it, Andy. Simply can't do it.
I just feel in a situation like that where they had to meet, then it becomes, because you're right, there are calls where they don't meet. They make the call.
They met.
They're confident in it,
they
whether it's right
meet,
or wrong.
But they met once, and they said they all agreed at that point that it was a penalty.
So who changed their mind?
The person who saw the video.
Which one of those four people was that person?
But see, I'm not going to.
By the way.
Or was it the visiting or the home team coach up on the bench screaming, at the referees that they got it wrong, that had one of them sort of casually glance up and then say, hey, we did get it wrong. Because the
I'm getting
look
itchy
because you're making this is good. This is good.
I'm
getting itchy. I'm so angry. I'm like scratching my neck as you're talking.
So the broken stick on Marchand, he breaks his stick, flexing it to shoot a puck. And there's a slashing call, and it was taken back 2 weeks ago. But that was a conversation that happened between the referees without looking up, I take it, anyway. And it was clear cut. And that even surprised me. You can count how many times you've seen a guy go into the penalty box and then come out again. It just doesn't happen.
Right. I think if they discuss it alone, that's fine.
That's totally fine. That's four referees, but that's refereeing. That's not TV monitoring.
Yeah.
So I have
now who's putting what on the TV monitor?
I have more to say about that. However, I will wait because now it is time. We're going to go to break. We're going to have Pierre LeBrun join us. We'll carry on the conversation with him as you continue to listen to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050, streaming online and on iHeartRadio. All right, so we're discussing the whole Polak non-penalty thing. So you guys are saying, no, let the refs confer on the ice, and whatever their decision is, that's their decision.
Once.
Don't have them look
singular.
At anything. Okay. So see, here's my argument now. This is all I have to say, is that the fan experience at home is so good now. It's so elevated because
HD
you have different angles. You have HD, 4K now, for the love of geez. Now the makeup's just going to get thicker. But you have all this stuff now where the fan at home has a better view of the game, better understanding of the play than the refs. And I just feel like you're putting the refs in a sticky situation if you don't allow them to see stuff. Now, here's the other thing. Now, the two things they're allowed to review, because if they get challenged, right, is your offside, goalie interference.
If they get challenged.
And yeah, if they get challenged. And then, of course, the refs can look as well at goals, certain goals. So, and every time I say, and this was the argument I was bringing up to your point, Pooley, I'm like, well, you know, the offside, leave it alone. It's annoying. Just let them go. It happens so quickly. Ah. And everyone always comes right back at me and says, well, do you want the right call or not?
Okay, are you going to use the referee's challenge last night to look at that Polak penalty? That's a different story.
So now you're going to allow teams to challenge that?
You've got one challenge. Are you going to allow it to use an egregious penalty?
If that's the case, then maybe we should allow more than one challenge.
Oh, no. But see, the problem with that is, with what I just said, is a penalty is a subjective thing. I think it's a hook. The angle I'm at, I think it's a hook. Now you're going to get together and discuss it with three other guys on the ice. I think it's a hook. Yeah. I think it's a hook. A referee's not going to go back on his judgment call on that.
But those aren't the types of plays I'm talking about. I'm talking about the ones where it's so noticeable that the refs are going, oh, geez, I really don't know.
That wasn't one of those last night.
But it was. They all got together to say, yikes, what happened?
Well, here's the other thing. If your stick's on the ice, Roman Polak, you don't ever get yourself in that situation.
Well, he's trying to bat the puck out of the air. And then he batted it in Huberto's face.
No, he hit it with his hand. And his stick was also up in the air. Mm. Either way, this can also come back around on you.
100%.
The wrong way at
100%.
Home.
Yeah.
It happened to me in the American League in Game 7 of the playoffs. We scored a goal. It's different because there's no review at that level. But it was, they called it a goal. It was unclear, though, as if it actually crossed the line or not. Mm-hmm. And they keep showing it on the clock, and we're the home team, and we're like, stop showing the goal.
Because it's questionable.
It might come back, yeah.
We're back to my American League conversation now.
Yeah, it goes both ways. And the same could be said for a penalty replay, because guess what? No offense to the guy that is in charge of, or girl, the person that's in charge of putting those replays up, they're not always thinking about what's best for the home team.
They're firing the crowd up.
Yeah.
That's
their job. They're firing the crowd up. But it looked like in that second referee scrum, it looked like the referee deferred to one of the linesmen.
All right, that's it. We made our points. Let's bring in now our TSN Hockey Insider, Pierre LeBrun. This Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It. How you doing, Pierre?
I'm all right.
My liney.
Bonjour de Montréal, tout le monde.
Is that where you are right now?
Yes, thanks for noticing.
Are you in Montreal?
I am. I guess you didn't watch Insider Trading yesterday.
Well, wait a second. You know what? You guys jump on planes so quickly. Like during the morning, you can be in one city, and by the afternoon, you're somewhere else. I have no clue where you guys are. I can't keep up.
This is true.
Gord Miller flies in days of for Leafs lunch. I'm like, where were you?
That's a good point. Well, no one travels like Gord and Ray and Noodles. Those guys are everywhere. I'm not that bad. Not yet. The playoffs are around the corner, though.
Yes, and you're hoping for the San Jose gig again, aren't you?
I'm hoping, but I got a feeling that the Leafs and the Habs and the Senators are going to keep me in Ontario there for a bit.
Not a bad thing, my friend. So, okay, you're the guy that I like to talk to about the Olympic stuff. Now, I just want to talk about a couple things here, just because, again, there's been some announcements that I think could also pose a wee bit of a snag here. So yesterday, NBC, and we've brought them up before because we said, you know, if you don't end up sending your players, NHL, do you really want to go up against NBC coverage? And then somebody brought up the point where NBC typically time delays, right? So maybe they can make it work. But NBC announced that their coverage of the PyeongChang Winter Olympics are going to be live across all time zones. NBC is now going to dedicate their entire channel to the Olympics. Is this something else that just, is it just like another snag here for NHLers not going to the games?
Yeah, I mean, Bobby Mack brought up the NBC angle on Insider Trading last night. I mean, it's important because NBC, of course, is going to be devoted to Olympic coverage during those couple of weeks, despite being an NHL partner, which is going to hurt to some degree its coverage of NHL games if the NHL isn't in PyeongChang, right? So you can't escape that reality. You know, not to mention the fact that behind the scenes, you got to know that NBC's wishing and hoping and pressuring the league to reconsider here. So, I mean, listen, as I've been saying for a couple of weeks now, we're in lockout mode. Everything that's coming out, I mean, you saw the quotes that I got from Renee Fassell on Monday. Fassell, head of the IIHF, again, shot across the bow at the league saying you can't just pick and choose, skip one Olympics and then show up in Beijing 4 years later. Not sure that those words were well appreciated within the NHL offices in New York. And so they're going at it. I mean, it feels like a CBA fight right now, except that it has more than two sides to it.
That's the unique thing here. You talk about negotiation, and one piece of negotiation, I guess we just briefly touched on it, but is it between the NHL and the NBC where the NHL could benefit from it moving forward with the U.S. TV contract?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's that, Dave. I mean, there's NHL wanting more from the IOC, even something as simple as can we show highlights on the NHL Network?
Which, once again, if I see the picture of Sidney Crosby, the picture, mind you, not the viz,
right,
of Sidney Crosby scoring the golden goal one more time, I mean, really?
Yeah.
I mean,
and
there
again,
can be some
league,
give and take on both sides here.
When it comes to NHLPA, no question the league, I think, would like some labor peace to the end of this CBA. But from the player's perspective, and I get their side in this, as Donald Fear told me last week, why should the players give up anything to do what they feel is right for the sport? And why is that a negotiation? So a lot of different sides to this. I would tell everyone who's taken the time to see all these comments to treat it like a lockout, whereas a lot of posturing. You got to wait till we get to the very tangible moment. As I said last night on Insider Trading, I think the league is, given how the positions have hardened, I think there's some debate within the league offices, you know, do we pull the plug on this sooner rather than later? But again, is that something that they want out there so that, the IOC and the NHLPA reacts to it? So it's going to be annoying here until it's over either way, but I would caution that we need to be careful that a lot of the hot air coming out is also the sides trying to gain, gain position media-wise here through this.
Here, I'd be shocked as a former player if this was used at all in doing anything with the CBA. It's a hard and fast rule for the guys to, the top 2% already get the benefit in a lot of different ways. And the Olympics is not something that benefits the other guys. I mean, you get a vacation, but it's not something worth fighting for 99% of the league. So I'd be surprised on that end. My question is, though, is there a deadline? Like, is there going to come a point in time where this is this is like decided anytime soon?
Yeah, they can't. I mean, they literally cannot go forever. I mean, Rene Fasel has said that late April, the end of April, is as far as he believes this can go. None of the sides are giving a specific date because I think they fear that the other sides involved can use it to their advantage. But that's a loose time frame from Rene Fasel that he doesn't know how they can go through this because, you know, if the NHL is part of the Olympics next year, you have a completely different setup logistically in terms of friends and family, housing, where does everyone go, how do we move them around. If it's a non-NHL tournament, there's a lot less of that in terms of the VIP treatment and the amount of people attending the actual event. So, but you need to know very soon. You can't wait until July to figure out whether you need another building built.
Yeah.
So there is that element. I mean, obviously the NHL is feeling the pressure of going on with their lives either way. You know, if there's no Olympics, there has to be an All-Star game. That hasn't been announced, right? So there are a lot of time issues that are hitting here. And of course, for Rene Fasel and IIHF, they actually run the Olympic tournament. They want to know, if we don't have NHL players, then let's dig down here on what the format's going to be and what kind of players we're going to allow to be part of the tournament if there's no NHLers. I mean, that has some intricate details attached to it. So no question that clock's ticking here.
We're speaking to Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. Before we let you go, I wanted to get your comments on saying goodbye to the Detroit Red Wings streak of 25 straight years making it into the playoffs. There was something about this streak that I was also just proud of as somebody who covers the NHL because it was the longest streak across all pro platforms. Took a little bit of pride in that it was the NHL who had that. But, I mean, I don't know. You never want to say, is this a good thing? But in some ways, is it a blessing in disguise? Like, just cut the cord. I mean, this is a team that, yes, they made the playoffs for 25 years straight. But then, I mean, would it weigh on their mind that it just became about the record? Because the last time they made it out of, like, even the first round was 4 years ago. I mean, I don't know. New arena, new start.
I mean, the streak itself, as you say, is phenomenal. We're never going to see it again in the NHL, especially as long as the salary cap exists, right? I mean, it's just to not draft in the top 10 forever and to keep coming up with talent and making the playoffs, it's ridiculous. But to be honest, the streak lasted 3 or 4 years too long, really, for the overall benefit of this franchise because now they're finally out, but they've missed out on the lotteries that had McDavid and Eichel. And Matthews and Liney. I mean, those would have been the years to have the streak in and to get in on that action. No one's going to come out and say that in Detroit because what are you going to do, try and lose? I mean, it's kind of dumb to say that, I understand. But
especially with Datsyuk and Zetterberg.
Well, yeah, but it is unfortunate that, you know, this gradually became a team that was, you know, a good team, above average team, and not a great team over the course of time. And the reason for that is, as Sergei Fedorov and Steve Yzerman and Brendan Shanahan and Nick Lidstrom left, they were replaced for the most part by good players, not superstars. And that's, I'm not referring to Datsyuk. I include him as part of the superstars. But every superstar that left was replaced by a player that wasn't quite at the same caliber, right? And that's not a shot at Nyquist or any of that core that's there in Detroit, you know, the advocators of the world. But that's the reality. I mean, they're a team now made up of a lot of good players, above average players, but no one at the ilk of all those great superstars that was at the heart of all those championships. And so they definitely need to rejig things now.
Mm-hmm. Pierre, appreciate you taking the time, my friend. Enjoy Montreal.
Sounds good. Merci beaucoup.
That is Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. This Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It, monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. More coming up on Leafs Lunch here as you continue to listen on TSN 1050, streaming online and on iHeartRadio.
Everybody in the whole place knows what's right, so I don't get what the big deal is. Why wouldn't we just be happy they got it right? It takes 2 seconds. There's a big screen up there. You don't even have to go over and watch this little monitor. You just get to watch the big thing right there and get it right, and everyone goes home happy. Players want it right. We want it right. The fans want it right. Get it right. Let's move on. And it's quick.
Get it right. See? The refs just got it right. It's fine.
Does he want them to get it right on the road in Ottawa in the playoffs, Andy? When they keep showing the same replay?
You are right. It goes back and forth at some point.
It's the subjective nature of most penalties that would grind the game to a halt. Because what one referee thinks is hooking, another referee might not.
Fine, then. Call me. I'll make the final decision.
Oh, great.
So you wanted to say something
kinda
a little
like
bit.
This show.
Yeah, about Detroit-Edmonton. Let's finish off that conversation. That what did you want to say there about how...
Well, Edmonton and Calgary, it's such a timely thing as a sports fan. When you're growing up, you go through different phases. I don't know whether a kid watches most hockey when he was, I don't know, between 12 and 16 or 17 when in our generation, or 10 years old, mm-hmm. and teams are great. And when I played the first 8 years, Detroit was terrible. Terrible. You knew you were going to win. And Edmonton was really good in winning the Stanley Cup every year. And it's just so timely now that they reverse positions on the same day. That's so significant to me as a player. You know, I watched Detroit get good. I watched Edmonton get bad. And then it was a long period of time.
Yeah.
And for them to switch essentially playoff roles on the same day.
Yeah.
Cool.
Are we getting the... All right. We're going to get ready for our TV hour next here on Leafs Lunch. That's right. We are now 2 hours. Stick around.